Hello. You have discovered the Felon File. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. The Shade of Blue stories for Felon File today. New Year's Day 1986. The body of 28-year-old Deborah Ann Wolfe was found at the bottom of a small pond outside her isolated cabin near Fort Bragg, North Carolina. She lived alone with her dogs Mason and Morgan. Why was the case file destroyed? Evidence observed but it disappeared. Murder or accident? Listen and decide. Background music track Unspoken by Mew. The sponsor for today's episode of The Felon File is The Raven's Glass Pub, Asheville's best spurious restaurant and pub. Scott, we're recording.
Welcome back to Felon File. As Victoria said, we are a podcast that look at crime and punishment issues, incidents that occurred involving law enforcement, the court system, the good guys, the bad guys, the crazy guys, the unusual and the bizarre that occurred in the Appalachian Mountains and beyond. Coming to you today once more from the recording studios at the International Recording Station at Scratch Ankle, North Carolina. Once more, Victoria is running the show for us and keeping us straight and hopefully making us sound like we know what we're talking about, or at least making it understandable what we're talking about. My wife says I very seldom sound like I know what I'm talking about. But anyway, neither here nor there. Now, we have talked about some homicides that have occurred in the Piedmont region of North Carolina, the United States. 1927, homicide that occurred in that location, a missing person case that we're working on right now from the 1940s that we requested information from the state archives and a FOIA request to the FBI, which we've gotten back, and it's gotten some pretty interesting information. We're looking forward to putting that podcast together for you guys. I think you'll find it bizarre and interesting. Today's podcast, though, we're talking about a homicide, or was it a homicide? We do know it was a death. And New Year's Day, 1986, the body of 28-year-old Deborah Ann Wolfe was found at the bottom of a small irrigation pond just outside her cabin off of MacArthur Road near Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Wolfe lived alone with her dogs, Mason and Morgan. Cumberland County, where the death or possible homicide occurred, has a population of 350,000. Of course, it is home to Fayetteville, in one of the nation's largest military bases, Fort Bragg, home of the 82nd Airborne. And of course, as previous podcasts have gone over, Fayetteville is no stranger to bizarre and sensational murder cases. In 2002, Special Operations Soldier Major David Shannon was shot to death while he slept in his home near Fort Bragg. His wife, Joan, and her teenage daughter were charged and convicted of killing Major Shannon. 9 months prior to when the body of Debbie Wolfe was discovered in the pond, a mother and her two children were found brutally murdered in their home on Summerhill Road near the entrance to Fort Bragg Military Base. Commonly referred to as the Eastburn Murders, the case received a lot of national media attention and with the eventual arrest of a soldier by the name of Timothy Hennens soon after the discovery of the body. Over the course of the next 20 years, Mr. Hennens would face three trials. He was convicted in state court and sentenced to death in 1986. The original death sentence was overturned, and in a follow-up trial in 89, he was found not guilty. Retired from the Army in 2004, he faced a court-martial trial in 2010 after the DNA linked him back to the crime. Hennens continues to claim that he's innocent, and a CBS miniseries, I think it was called Innocent Victims, about the murder, came out in 1993. Another Fayetteville murder that happened in 2002 and received, again, national attention was the murder of Air Force pilot Marty Thier. Thier's wife, Michelle, was charged and convicted of participating in the murder of her husband, along with a John Diamond, who she was having an affair with. Diamond was a sniper-trained sergeant in the U.S. Army. He was also convicted of killing the pilot. And of course there is, and we can't forget this gentleman, Dr. Jeffrey McDonald, former American medical doctor and United States Army captain, who was convicted in August of 1979 of murdering his pregnant wife and two daughters in February of 1970 while serving as a Special Forces physician and doctor. McDonald has always proclaimed his innocence, and which he claims were committed by four intruders, three males and one female, who had entered the unlocked rear door of his apartment or his house at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and attacked him and his wife and his children with instruments like knives and clubs and ice picks. Prosecutors and appellate courts have pointed to this strong physical evidence attesting to his guilt. He is currently incarcerated at the Federal Corrections Institution in Cumberland, Maryland, and personally, I hope he stays there. The McDonald case remains one of the most litigated murder cases in American criminal history. But going back to our original case, Deborah Wolfe's death, the coroner report and investigation by the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department and the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation reached the conclusion the young woman died accidentally by drowning. The report from the medical examiner did list multiple abrasions on several of her fingers. These could have been defensive wounds, and it is reasonable to conclude that in typical drowning situations, the deceased's eyes and mouth would be open along with her hands and arms in a clawed position, as though they were fighting for their lives. However, Debbie's eyes and mouth were closed and her body appeared as though she was in a relaxed state when she went into the water. Wolfe's mother, a Miss Jenny Edwards, never accepted the official ruling. And it's not unusual for a family member to have difficulty in accepting the official ruling of a death case. She and other family members, though, believe that her daughter, Deborah Wolfe, had been murdered. This is not out of the ordinary. Like I said, many family members have difficulty accepting the passing of a loved one. It's common to hold the belief that the deceased was murdered or forcibly taken away from them, denial, of course, being one of the stages of the grieving process. In this case, though, there's a number of unanswered questions, and they have caused quite a few others over the last 35 years to question this ruling. The time of death was set 6 days prior to discovery of the body on December 26, 1985, the day after Christmas. Deborah Wolfe was a nurse, and she never failed to show up for work at Fayetteville Veterans Administration for her shift, but one day she did. Wolfe was known to be a very dedicated nurse, and it was very unusual. She had been seen leaving work previous evening at 4 p.m. on the 26th, 1985, and did not show up for her shift the next day. When they heard nothing, Wolf's stepfather, retired Sergeant John Edwards, was contacted by the VA hospital, and he was also unable to locate Deborah, and the sheriff's department was notified and a missing person report was filed. 4 days later, the deputies were searching her cabin using a bloodhound. Not satisfied with the Cumberland County's investigation response, Mom, Jenny Edwards, hired her own dive team and investigators to look around. In the freezing weather, on the new day of January 1st, 1986, Kevin Groton and his friend Gordon Childress entered the pond searching for any sign of Deborah Wolf. Both men were familiar with rescue work and water work, as far as that goes. Childress looked for any evidence that he could locate that would indicate what happened. Soon after the dive started, though, Childress found two sets of foot impressions pressed into the thick mud along what appeared to be drag marks. 2 minutes later, after entering the water, Gordon Childress came across a body. Debbie's body was found about 30 feet from the bank in about 5.5 feet of water. Childress later said that the body was inside what looked like a burn barrel. You know, a rusty 55-gallon oil drum with holes in it that people burn trash in. Soon after the discovery of the body, the sheriff's department was dispatched to the scene. The body was identified as that of Deborah Wolf. Wolf was found dead under questionable circumstances, according to stories in the Fayetteville Observer newspaper. The case was called the Definition of Mystery, based on a number of reasons, including the fact that why was Wolf wearing clothes that her mother insisted did not belong to her when the body was pulled from the pond? The mother swore that the clothes belonged to somebody else. Brown's corduroy pants that she had on when she was discovered were too big and too long and were unzipped. Her bra was 3 sizes too large. The Nike shoes were 3 sizes too large and were also men's shoes. She was found wearing a men's size 6 when she actually wore a lady's size 7. When Debbie was found, she had on a new regulation army field jacket that did not belong to her or to anyone else that they could locate that they were aware of that was associated with her. The jacket had no name tag and they were unable to trace it to its original owner. Was the victim's body, as the divers who found her claimed, stuffed headfirst into what may have been an empty 55-gallon barrel? Now, there was a barrel that Wolf used to store firewood outside her cabin. It disappeared. There was no barrel found where there was usually one kept next to the porch the day that her body was found. The following day, when the water in the pond was lowered, Sheriff's Captain Jack Watts, who had worked the sheriff's office at the time, he would later deny the claims of the divers, saying there was never a barrel in the pond. When they lowered it, they could not find one. Allegedly, both of the divers have claimed to have seen the barrel and removed Wolf from it when she was discovered in the pond. Also, why, according to write-ups in the Fayetteville Observer newspaper, after interviewing neighbors, was Deborah Wolf's vehicle found to be parked in her yard in a way that she never parked it? Instead of in the drive, it was actually in the yard. The driver's seat was also reported to have been pushed all the way back, rather than in a more forward position. Wolf was 5'3 and drove with a seat forward, according to the family. It was alleged that Wolf was organized, tidy, and neat. Yet when her mother and a friend arrived at Wolf's house, they reported that it was in a mess. They also located beer cans lying in the yard. The dogs had not been fed, and Debbie's nurse's uniform was lying on the floor in the kitchen. And other personal items were scattered about as well. A strange message was also said to have been left on Wolf's answering machine. We'll go into that in a little bit more here in a minute. 2 years after her daughter's death, Edwards told Fayetteville Observer reporter Pat Reese in a 1988 interview, "There are so many questions and not even one answer." And of course, it goes without saying, Deborah's mother was very critical of the sheriff's office and how they handled her daughter's investigation. Captain Watts, when he was interviewed later, said, "Nobody is ever 100% certain. Evidence showed, and from the information we had, I felt like it was a drowning. I think we were pretty adamant about what we believed. We investigated everybody. We done a pretty good investigation," he said. "We couldn't find any marks on the bodies. It would have been there if there had been foul play. We were consistent with what the medical examiner found." Now, Watts said evidence seemed to indicate that Wolf was playing outside and accidentally fell into the pond. It was wintertime and there was a little ice around the edge of the pond, and that's the reason she had a big jacket on. There was no mention of where the jacket had come from. Watts said there was evidence she had back problems, which may have made it difficult for her to get out of the water. A recent inquiry by media sources discovered later that because Wolf's death was listed as an accident, the sheriff's department's investigated records were purged. In other words, they were destroyed. Because of the efforts of family and friends, Wolf's case gained national media attention in the years that immediately followed her death. As a matter of fact, in 1991, Unsolved Mysteries devoted an entire episode to her death. That same year, TV Guide printed a story, "The Case of the Dubious Drowning," a play on a Perry Mason title. They turned to Hollywood private investigator to Robert Frasco to solve the mystery based solely on the evidence shown on the Unsolved Mystery TV show. Now, the coroner said Wolf drowned. The detective noted in the magazine piece that the pond was full of silt and her body was found to be clean. The Hollywood detective reached the conclusion that her body was placed in the pond after she was killed. As for the mysterious barrel, he believes the killer probably abducted the nurse from her home and murdered her, and to set about making it look like an accidental drowning, the murderer returned to the pond and placed Wolf in the barrel to help sink the body. He later returned to the site and removed the barrel. Probably because it had incriminating information in it, he said, such as fingerprints. I don't know about that. Fingerprints are not that reliable when you submerge them in a lake for a while or a pond. It is known the pond was drained and there was no barrel to be found. That's a definite. According to one story at the time, the mother and a friend of hers saw Wolf's answer machine blinking with an unlistened-to message when they went into the cabin after the phone call. One message was a male stating to Deborah that he was concerned, hoping she wouldn't miss any more days at work. This they found strange, as Wolf had not been absent from work yet in quite some time. They also felt the timing of the voice message was strange. Not only was it not from her actual employers, but at the time Wolf's phone received the message, she should have already been well into her scheduled shift for another several hours. We can't compare this to the investigator notes and files, as they don't exist anymore. The information was posted on a 2017 internet forum post called "Explain Death: The Strange Death of Debbie Wolf." Now, with all this information, if she was killed, if it was a homicide, who was the killer? The private detective hired by TV Guide thought it was a homicide and said so in the article. Not that that's any proof of a murder. Detectives would say that they investigated several patients with mental problems from the Veterans Hospital, including the man who left the voicemail message. Now, how would a patient get the phone number of one of the staff, especially if that patient has a mental health issue? Good question. Soon after being interviewed by the sheriff, the man who left the voicemail, or the message on the answering machine, later left the state of North Carolina. In 1990, Edwards, Debbie's mother, said in an interview that her daughter had a field jacket that belonged to one of her brothers, who was 6 feet tall and weighed about 185 pounds. The jacket was discovered, but this was not the jacket that she was wearing. Another man's type field jacket that was found hanging in the cabin was also unidentified as to who owned it. She also said in the interview the jacket found on her body was a men's small jacket, brand new with no other markings. Looking in the pockets, there was no lint, no sand, no dirt. If she was in the water for 6 days and nights, her point of view was, would there not be debris there? Now, the mother had a cardboard box where she kept all the clothing and other evidence that Wolf wore when her body was removed from the water. Deborah's mother claimed the tennis shoes and pants were too large. She was also wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers shirt that nobody had ever seen before, and apparently she wasn't a Steelers fan. Other items in the box included glass beads and a handmade Indian necklace. Inside a pouch on the necklace was what Edwards described as an evil eye. Charm enables the spirit to see its way into the next life. I never knew Debbie was into that sort of thing, the mother said in her interview. It was also reported in the interview that Wolf's purse had been wedged into a very hard-to-reach part of her waterbed, and the beer cans of a brand she didn't drink were strewn about the yard. Then there was the barrel again, the one that divers allegedly said they saw in the water, and the one that Captain Watts of the Sheriff's Department said was not in the water. My diver said there was a barrel, the mother said. Not only that, but Debbie had a barrel in her yard, and it was missing. Another interesting twist that was reported was that Wolf's body was found in 5.5 feet of water, 30 feet from the bank of the pond. The water at the edge of the pond was about an inch or two deep. The bottom had a very gentle slope, and the pond was only knee-deep, 5 feet from the edge. If she had happened into the pond accidentally, her mother insists, she would have immediately turned around and walked off. County detectives offered a theory that Wolf became frightened and disorientated in the water, moving towards the deeper water where she became the victim of immersion syndrome. Immersion syndrome, also referred to as immersion foot or trench foot, is a non-freezing peripheral cold injury caused by prolonged repetitive exposure to cold and damp temperatures, cool and cold water or mud, for example. The autopsy found only about a half teaspoon of water in Wolf's upper bronchial area. There was no foam in the mouth or in the throat, as is usually found in a drowning autopsy, and there was no water found in the lungs themselves. This is according to the autopsy report. Debbie's mother worked tirelessly for over 20 years trying to solve her daughter's murder and bring attention to the possibility that she had been murdered. And the question is, was it murder or was it an accident? Some newly discovered information by a Dr. Maurice Godwin, a former North Carolina police officer who has worked as a consultant to police and others in developing psychological and geographical profiles. He is a criminal investigative psychologist. His view of the files that are still in existence from the medical examiner's office and the FBI suggests that semen was present in the victim. Had she been raped? That's a good question. DNA profiling was not available to around 1985. A vaginal swab for evidence was reported to have been taken, but the evidence or the swab, it can't be located. It was supposed to have been submitted to the sheriff's office, but then we know that most of the case file was destroyed during filing cabinet cleaning, I guess. Can the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department find this lost swab? At that time frame and afterwards, now this is me speaking as a sexual assault detective in the 90s, The policy at the FBI was not to take any sexual assault evidence for analysis unless there was a suspect known at the time of the submission that it could be compared to. If it was a murder, it remains unsolved. Jerry Wolf, who was Wolf's father, died in 2002. Her mother passed away not soon long after that. Wolf's four siblings, Jerry, Joseph, John, and John's twin brother, who passed away as an infant, have also died, according to the website Find a Grave. Wolf is buried at the Arcadia Cemetery in the town of Arcadia, Louisiana, her place of birth. This is, again, according to Find a Grave. A private investigation, though, is still ongoing by Dr. Godwin. If you have information about this case, you, of course, can call the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office at 910-323-1500. If you have heard something or somebody has said something to you and you want to pass it along, I would highly suggest you do that. Thank you for listening. If you have thoughts on this podcast and would like to share them, you can contact Victoria and I through the felonfile.com webpage or scottlunsfordauthor.com, or just email us directly at felonfile@gmail.com. And if you'd be interested in copies of my books, fiction and nonfiction, you can find them at amazon.com and as well as Barnes & Noble. And don't forget, and of course, you've got to pick up a Felon File t-shirt or coffee mug. You can get these at our stuff page on the website. Nothing says leave me alone better in the morning than your first cup of coffee from a Felon File coffee mug. Now, if you've got a good idea for a Shade of Blue story or podcast that others might find of interest, and you'd like to see Victoria and I, and you would like to see Victoria and I do some research on it and perhaps produce it into a podcast, drop us a line. Let us know. You can also support Felon File Podcast by buying Victoria or me a cup of coffee from the link at one of our websites. This helps us remain as commercial-free as we possibly can, except for an occasional message of the Raven's Glass Pub and Restaurant located in the imaginary section of downtown Asheville, North Carolina. Check it out. Now, in the coming weeks, be safe and be secure. And please don't let the Shade of Blue stories frighten you from doing good things and doing something nice for somebody else. It's still the right thing to do for ourselves and our communities, and a best way to change that little part of the world in a positive direction that we happen to be standing in. Remember, like I said, be safe and secure. We'll talk to you guys later on the next Felon File podcast next Saturday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time in the United States. Thank you for listening. Bye, y'all.
You have been listening to the Felon File podcast with your host, Scott Lunsford. For more information on this podcast or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com and felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these websites. Be sure to check out the stuff page on the website. Pick up a Felon File t-shirt or coffee mug. You can also support the Felon File podcast by buying us a coffee from the link on the website. This is Victoria, your producer. Thank you for listening. 2, 1, end. Background track unspoken by MewSoundCloud.com. Mew music promoted by Free Stock. Music.com Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Unported License Creativecommons.org